Do you ever look in the mirror? You see a police car behind you? You slow down and you think, uh-oh. Well, what would happen if you said, hey, look, that's Officer Smith. How you doing? Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. Thanks for being part of our program today. I'm Ron Ropiak, and yes, yes, we've all been there. Don't deny it. You say to yourself, am I going too fast? Did I go over the yellow line? Did I come to a full stop? Tell me you haven't done that. But what would you be thinking if you saw a face in the police car that you knew, someone you had met and talked with? What would you be thinking then? That's our show today. Better interactions between the police and the people they serve, you and me. And how do we get there? How do we get to that point? Do you have any suggestions on our topic? Please let us know. Our email is tfs@wshu.org, and you can go to our Facebook page and tell us what you think. You can leave a comment there. It's Full Story WSHU. What prompted our show today was a study that came out of Yale recently. It's about community-oriented policing, specifically in New Haven. The author of that study is Kyle Payton, who's a Yale doctoral candidate in political science, and Kyle is joining us on Skype. Hey, Kyle, thanks for coming on today.
Hey, thank you. Happy to be here.
Kyle, look, we all know Yale and New Haven are, intertwined in many ways. But why do you choose New Haven over maybe other cities for your study?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you. I have a working relationship with the New Haven Police Department and with my collaborators on this study, Michael Ciarevolo at Rutgers and David Rand at MIT. Yale University, not only us, but, there's like the Yale Child Studies Initiative, for example, works with the police department. And so NHPD just has a sort of reputation for working with researchers, and they have a lot of experience doing that. And also they have a long sort of commitment to community policing.
Okay, thanks for that. Hey, how long did your study take?
So it started in August of 2018. We did some pilot studies with New Haven Police Department in the field. And then we rolled it out in August 2018, and then it ended in roughly, I think it was November, was when we finished up with all the survey data collection.
Now, before we get to the findings of your research, how would you describe what New Haven does in terms of community outreach? Is the city progressive compared to maybe other cities that you looked at?
I think it is quite progressive. So there's a variety of things that New Haven does differently from other cities. One of the things they do is they have 10 police districts, and so they have regular community meetings with folks that live in each police district. And so what happens there is the district manager, who's in charge of the district, will go at least once a month and have a meeting with the community, and people can turn up. People in the neighborhood can turn up and come and have face-to-face interactions with the district manager. They have a weekly comp stat meeting that I was actually just at this morning, and they encourage people from the city to come into the comp stat meeting and interface with the chiefs and the district managers through that venue. They've had a long history of doing walking beats, so regular walking beats in each of the 10 districts. And through those walking beats, officers usually, they'll stop into businesses, they'll chat to people. And so they're frequently out in the community engaging folks through non-enforcement interactions.
So you crunched the numbers, you talked to a number of the residents, and you found that, they like meeting the police officers?
So what we did is in August 2018, we surveyed about 2,000 people in New Haven. We sent out invitations to the letterbox of I think it was like 40,000 individuals or something in the city, and we got a response from about 2,000 that they would participate in a public opinion survey that we were running. And then what we did is we randomly assigned half of those of the homes in that survey to receive a visit from the New Haven Police Department from one of the 10 officers that we trained. 20 officers that we trained, officers went out, knocked on the door, had a short 10-minute interaction, and then we surveyed the residents 3 days after, and then 21 days after. And the main things we were looking at is does this increase police legitimacy, right? And so that was one of our primary outcomes, and also willingness to cooperate with the police. And we found that these short 10-minute as you said earlier, friendly, positive interactions, substantially increased residents' trust in the police and legitimacy, and also willingness to cooperate with the police. And these effects were detectable for up to 21 days, or 3 weeks after contact. So, they were quite durable effects, and we found that the effects were largest among non-white residents and people who had kind of the most negative orientations towards the police prior to the intervention.
Huh. It's because, I'm thinking that if I'm in that situation and I'm at home and I hear a knock at the door and I, look outside, look through the glass or whatever, and I see a police officer standing there, I'm thinking, uh-oh, what's wrong now? Did you get any of those reactions?
That's a great question. So one of the things that we trained the officers on was what we call the 20-second rule. And so the idea here was to disarm any anxiety within the first 20 seconds, because as you say, when you see a police officer at your door, you might be wondering, am I in trouble? Is somebody hurt? Is there a problem? And so within the first 20 seconds, the officers were trained to immediately sort of address that issue and say, nobody's hurt, everything's okay. I'm here, to introduce myself. If nobody's in trouble, everything's okay.
I have a number of questions for you, and I just want to say you're going to carry over after the break, so we'll be able, I think, to get to a good chunk of them. But it sounds almost as if this is somewhat reinventing the wheel, if you would, because, when I was young, there was what was called the cop on the beat in the cities. Mm-hmm. He would walk around, he would get to know the kids, the shop owners, he would check doors and windows, that kind of thing. This kind of sounds like the same thing in a way.
Yeah, so community policing has been around for a really long time. And so our study is a randomized controlled trial that is the first one in the United States that allows us to sort of, estimate the impact of this. Like, does it actually work? Specifically, does having a positive interaction with an officer actually change people's attitudes towards the police? And so, the reason, as you say, it's been around for a long time, but, we didn't really have a sense of whether this works and whether this is something that is worth investing in. Police departments have limited resources, and it's nice to have some data, I think, that shows that this is actually effective.
Because this puts a strain on some officers too, doesn't it? I mean, they're busy. They're dealing with a lot during their shifts. And is this something else that is being placed on their shoulders?
No, I think that, so I guess it would depend on how the police department in particular operationalized this. But as you say, with the walking beats, when there are dedicated walking beats, officers can, have these interactions more easy. When you're in a sort of responding for calls for service and you have to get out of your car and, do this in between calls for service, that's kind of a different model. So I think, as you know, the walking beats are the way in which departments have historically done this.
Now, when you say that the findings are durable, do you mean that the residents who meet the officers are maybe more inclined to reach out to them in times of trouble, when before they say, oh, let's not pick up the phone because we don't know how the police will, or do they walk up to them on the streets and, with friendly gestures, conversation, things like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. We don't have any sort of data on, what people are doing. We don't, behavioral data. We just have, the survey data. So when I say willingness to cooperate, that was a survey measure. So, we asked residents questions about, if somebody, if the police were looking for somebody in the neighborhood and you knew where that person was, because, they committed a crime, would you be likely to help the police, for example, things like that. So we don't have, unfortunately, any behavioral data on what people are doing, after they receive the intervention in terms of their interactions with the cops. We just have the survey data for this study.
Have you shared your findings with the New Haven Police Department?
Yes.
And what was the reaction?
The reaction was that, I think that they believe that this works. So, this is something, it was for them, it was confirmation of what they thought, they already thought, basically.
So a little validation there, huh?
Yeah, validation.
Have you heard from other police departments who know of your study who might be interested in doing this?
We've not on the grounds of being interested in doing it. We would of course love to work with additional departments to replicate the study, but we have had some emails from chiefs in different departments saying, this is nice to see. I also believe this works, and I'm trying to do this in my department as well. And so nothing on the terms of like, let's collaborate, but we have gotten some contact from folks saying, you know, it's nice to see this. We're doing this. Great.
We have to take a break in about 30, 45 seconds or so. But before that, are these contacts coming from police departments in cities or in towns?
Cities.
Because they have the ability, obviously, then to walk around in downtowns and so on.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it would be hard to do, you know, this kind of thing in a like a rural town, for example, where you where you're driving around and so on. So like New Haven is a pretty dense urban environment, and so it's quite easy to have the kind of community policing initiatives that they have here, because it is a it's very urban.
Now, with me in the studio is someone I've been trying to meet for a while now, Gary McNamara. He's the retired Fairfield Police Chief and the Executive Director of Public Safety and Government Affairs at Sacred Heart University. Great to have you here, Chief.
Ron, thank you very much for having me on this important topic.
Also with us on the line is Captain Robert Calamaris, who is with the Special Services Bureau from the Fairfield Police Department. Captain, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
And one additional guest, Lieutenant Terry Blake from the Norwalk Police Department. He's the Public Information Officer and the Commander of the Community Police Services Division. Lieutenant Blake, thanks for your time today, sir.
My pleasure.
Chief, you heard the first part of the discussion today. What's your reaction?
Well, I think it's a good report, and it reinforces kind of what we know in the changing environment of police in the community, is that we are the community and the community is us, so we really have to work together and build those relationships. You know, Ron, the police uniform is like a Rorschach inkblot test. You see the interaction that you've had. So if you've had a good interaction with law enforcement, with a police officer, you're more likely to experience one in the future or believe that you may. And at the same time, if you had a poor reaction, and oftentimes we never get an opportunity to share with people those positive reactions on an ongoing basis. So I think that's important.
Part of human nature, right? We always stress the negative.
We do. You do. You get your perception from TV, from the media, as opposed to those people that are out in your streets actually trying to protect you.
When you were police chief of Fairfield, you were known as someone who wasn't afraid to try new programs, to take suggestions. With that as a background, what worked for the Fairfield Department in terms of creating better relationships?
I think you have to be present. I think you have to have a clear mission. I mean, the mission of the Fairfield Police Department is really to keep Fairfield safe and make Fairfield safer. And so what we tried to do is to always be present and to be responsive, finding those opportunities to meet the community before they had an issue. Obviously, that does a lot of things. It prevents an issue from happening in the first place, potentially. But at the same time, you have to build trust in law enforcement and in your police officers. You have to have confidence and trust in them, not blind confidence and not blind trust. You have to question what they do or what we do. But at the same time, you always have to reach towards those opportunities, and you have to get it to every officer. This is not a program that a few officers do. Mm. It really has to be a philosophy that police exist to make the communities better, and one of the ways we do that is to have those positive interactions with them.
Lieutenant Blake, Captain Calamaris, I'm going to bring you in 1 second. I just want to ask Kyle an important part of this conversation. And Kyle, the chief just mentioned that word trust. Did you hear that when you were doing your study from the residents who you spoke with? Because that seems to be the crux of the matter here.
In terms of trust?
Yes.
Yeah, so we trust is kind of a hard concept to measure in a survey, and so we conceptualize that as a legitimacy, police legitimacy, and so this is these are kind of overlapping concepts. So these are things like normative alignment, like do you think the police are respectful? Do you have confidence in the police department to do their job and things like this? So we took a sort of a broader view than just looking at trust per se. We looked at legitimacy and then also willingness to cooperate.
Lieutenant Blake, thanks for holding on. I remember a few years back when I was doing some work in around Washington in South Norwalk, and I remember that there were police officers on bikes in parts of Norwalk, and I got to know some of the officers. When I would get out of work late at night, they would be there. Just out of curiosity, is that program still in effect?
Yeah, that's correct. We still have, even today in the rain, there's a couple officers out on bikes, but it is part of our regular commitment to, you know, having officers out of their vehicles and interacting with the community on a closer basis. You know, one of the things we hear from the community is, had the cars drive by, but we really don't get to know the officers. So we do our best to, you know, provide foot patrols as well as the bike patrols, which, you know, it's one of those openers for us with the community there. Hey, what kind of bike is that? Hey, it's really neat you guys are riding a bike, or out on patrol. And it lets the officers kind of, you know, bridge any gap or answer any questions that exist.
I remember one of the officers telling me, and I just can't remember his name because it's going back a good 10 years or so, or more than that. But he was saying what a difference it made since they started doing this, because he got to know the residents, the people. And like you said, some would just come up to him and start talking about the bike, which led to other conversations.
Absolutely. And that allows us to build trust with the community that we're serving. And, you know, as the chief alluded to before, you know, the police are the community, and the community are the police. And without that that joint interest in keeping the community safe, you know, communities can start to have crime issues.
Captain Calamaris, I can see community-oriented policing in cities where properties, as Kyle was saying before, like New Haven, which are a bit closer and maybe officers are walking around a little bit more. But what about in a town such as Fairfield? Does that mean that one of the officers maybe could actually just get in the car and drive house to house to say hi and maybe a quick introduction, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, we try to do different things. Like this morning we had a coffee with a cop down at the local Starbucks, and it was very well received from the people. We try to get the interactions in a positive manner, as opposed to, as the chief alluded to earlier, you know, a lot of times interactions with police are when people are in distress or have they're dealing with an issue or a problem, and they need the police to come and take care of that problem or solve it for them. But we try to put forth a positive interaction so it balances out that constant negativity that you alluded to before, you know?
Hmm. And Kyle, that, I think that brings up an interesting point, because, you know, coffee with the cop, and I'm wondering about kids getting together with police officers, because I'm assuming that this would need to start at a young age, because that's when your perceptions are changed or set for your life. So with that in mind, was that part of your study?
So we don't have any, everybody in our study was over the age of 18. But the New Haven Police Department, for example, does have a program called PALS, and it's a summer camp for kids. And so that's one program that they do to try to increase trust among young people by having them come to their summer camp. And they also do do the coffee with a cop as well. They also do Cops and Ballers, which is an opportunity to have positive contact through a basketball game. So there's a variety of other things that New Haven does and other police departments do, but we were specifically focused on people that were 18 and over.
When you say PALS, I'm assuming Police Athletic League?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Chief, I know you want to jump in.
No, I think that's important, is that there's a lot of programs that are out there that law enforcement does. I mean, it's really a new concept in law enforcement. Not that we didn't always realize we needed the community, but a lot of this community outreach is kind of driven by a lot of these national events that shine a real poor light on law enforcement. So we have to create the new model of a police officer. I mean, our police officers are trained in the academy. They receive ongoing training. You know, frankly, here at Sacred Heart University, we have a criminal justice program. They have a program on community policing. One of their classes is on community policing. So the concept of law enforcement has changed from just law enforcement to really, you know, community engagement officers,
and that's sociology.
Really what it is as part of that. Absolutely, those programs have to interact. I mean, sociology, psychology, and you know, and we have an ultimate task of making sure the community is safe through enforcement of the laws. I mean, yeah, it's a combination of all of those and even more. I mean, we really need the community, and we need to understand people. The only way to understand people and have them understand us is to interact.
And we get live updates from the police radio on the radio as we speak. Chief, you ran the Fairfield Police Department for a number of years. Now you run the Public Safety Department at Sacred Heart. How do you get your staff, I don't want to stray too far off topic, but how do you get your staff to interact with community policing, if you will, with the students? Because I think that would go a long way in determining their interactions with officers after graduation.
Sure, it's really a cultural shift. You need strong leadership, you know, not only at the top, you need that second layer of leadership to really understand that. And it's changing the culture. It's recognizing that their role is not to just be people that are visible and giving out tickets. It's, you know, we just had a Brew with the Crew event in the center of campus yesterday as well, you know, trying to get that same message off. We packed boxes during Thanksgiving time for the needy. One of our officers traveled during one of the breaks to Jamaica to help Habitat with Humanity and some of the students here. So it's really over-engaging in that. So, you know, it has to start somewhere, and where it starts is with people understanding it and beginning to change the culture for everybody.
Kyle, I know I kept you a little bit longer than you bargained for. Do you have any final thoughts before you have to leave us?
No, I appreciate being on the show, and thank you very much.
It's our pleasure, and we'll catch up with you soon. And if you expand the study, we'd love to have you back on. Kyle Payton, author of the Yale Study on Community Policing in New Haven. But we are going to continue now speaking with our other guests. Lieutenant Blake, what are you hearing from residents? What do they tell you about this?
Well, I mean, everyone loves to have positive interactions with the police department. I mean, the majority of the community never has interaction with the police department. So when their only interaction is a positive one, it's enjoyable for them. You know, we try to promote a cooperative spirit in which, you know, our police officers and the citizens of our community, you know, really work together to promote a safe city.
Captain Calamaris, how do you get past that? You know, as the chief was talking about, a lot of the negative news that comes during bad times, and that being human nature being what it is, that's what people fixate on. How do you get past that?
I think it's mostly about transparency. And if you are being transparent in the things that you do and the actions you take and the rules that officers have to follow in their day-to-day activities, that is what builds trust through the community. If the community sees that you are doing your best to do your job the way you should be doing it, and being transparent about how you do it, you know, there was a time when kind of the officers would just be very quiet and closed, and it was kind of like a brotherhood. Mm-hmm. And to be quite honest with you, officers are just regular people. They just have a unique job. And I think with that transparency, that leads to building trust within the community, and it really goes a long way, and we've seen that in our police department.
Captain, I'm so glad that you brought that word up, transparency. And Chief, I wonder if I can get you to talk about this, because I was thinking about this the other day, this program specifically in terms of journalism, because there's been a push in journalism over the last, well, few years, because many believe that there's fake news. And so to counteract, some newspapers, some TV stations, radio stations are now publishing everything that they do before they get on the air with the story or into the newspaper. And they'll say, we had this idea for a story. These are the people we contacted. This is the reason why. And they will publish all this information. So the transparency is there, and you know the thought process. And I'm assuming that in many ways, it's the same thing for those who serve the public.
Well, it absolutely is. I mean, we want to make sure that we're transparent and we're giving out information. I mean, we have to be responsive. You might not like the answer that you receive initially, but we can't hide under or hide problems or hide issues or hide crime patterns or anything else under a rock. I mean, we want to be open about those issues. We have to be present in the community. The days of, you know, not releasing reports or not releasing information are gone. I think we need to have that information available to the public, because that kind of builds it. If we are present in the community, meaning that we are engaged, that we're letting them know what occurred, you know, officers sometimes do make mistakes, or frankly, sometimes we have officers that probably shouldn't be police officers, and we address that behavior. We have to let the community know right off the bat that this occurred, this is what we're doing about it, these are the steps we've taken to prevent it from occurring again, so that we can kind of constantly build that trust, because you've talked about it. This is only one aspect of it. Playing baseball, riding bikes is a very important part of it, but at the same time, there's all that back end. Are our officers properly trained? Are they engaging the community appropriately? Are they violating policy? And if they're violating policy, are we ensuring that that behavior is addressed? All of that plays a part in it. It starts with having a positive interaction with the community, but we have to follow it up with all that other stuff.
Lieutenant Blake, I know I asked you about what you're hearing from the residents, but at the same time, I have to ask you, are you seeing an overall shift in the perception or the overall relationship between the residents and the Norwalk Police Department?
In my tenure here, of over 20 years, I definitely have seen a more positive interaction, and I believe feedback, both informally as well as formally through studies that we've done, has shown that we have developed a stronger bond with our community, and that has lent itself, when issues may arise, to a trust. Being proactive in developing relationships with community leaders and members of the community, before something may happen, or before there is a problem with an officer or something along those lines, certainly lends itself to the trust that was mentioned by both Captain Calamaris and Chief McNamara. That trust is vital. It's vital in every community. We've seen communities where bad things have happened amongst law enforcement and the community, and it's been a powder keg. And that's not the day to pick up the phone and try and learn who's the head of this particular group. That's not the day to do that,
Captain Calamaris, with the minute that we have left in this segment, what would you like to see done as the next step in Fairfield? If you had your druthers right now and you could do something, what would it be?
Well, I think under the retired chief's plan, I was kind of brought in under his tenure and as the chief here, and he's taught me a lot as I've come up through the ranks, and he has started a foundation for us to just build on. You have to build the community before you need the community, and I think it's, as the chief said earlier, it's about relationships. And if you don't build relationships, then when the time comes that you need them, you don't have them. So you have to build those relationships first so that you have them when we need them, because we all have to work together, as Lieutenant Blake said, and without the community, it kind of stifles our ability to do our job.
The chief is going to stay with us. Gary McNamara is the retired Fairfield Police Chief and now the Executive Director of Public Safety and Government Affairs at Sacred Heart University. We are going to say goodbye to Captain Robert Calamaris. He's with the Special Services Bureau from the Fairfield Police Department. Captain, thank you. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much for having me, and it's good to hear Chief McNamara on and Lieutenant Blake. So thank you all for having me.
Lieutenant Terry Blake is with the Norwalk Police Department. He's the Public Information Officer and the Commander of the Community Police Services Division. Lieutenant Blake, thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
But I appreciate your time. Thank you.
We are continuing our discussion about community policing and fostering better relations between officers and members of their communities. With me in the studio is Chief Gary McNamara, retired Fairfield Police Chief and the Executive Director of Public Safety and Government Affairs at Sacred Heart University. Joining us on the line is Kyle Strober. Kyle is the Executive Director for the Association for a Better Long Island. Welcome, Kyle. How are you?
How are you, Ron? And thank you for having me on the show again.
Thank you. And Officer Martin Parker. Officer Parker is a community engagement officer from the Yale University Police Department. Officer Parker, thanks for your time, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Kyle, I know you've been listening. What's your reaction to what you've heard in terms of community policing?
Well, first I want to say it was many years ago this would be a rare occurrence, but nowadays it's not so rare that you'll have two Kyles on the same.
Exactly. Segment. I thought of that earlier.
But it's a time of change. And the other thing I'd like to say first and foremost is hats off to all the law enforcement officers that were on this show before me and to Officer Parker. I know one of them said they are just everyday people, but they are not. They are heroes within our community, and we have a lot of respect for everything that they do each and every day to protect the residents of Long Island, but also in every community across the country. In terms of the study, I think it reiterates what we've known for many years. Community-oriented policing is vital. Here in Nassau County, for example, one of the largest suburban counties in the country, we have 1.3 million people, and 2,400 officers make up the Nassau County Police Department. And within that department, they've had for many years here what they call POP officers, or problem-oriented police officers, which is similar, or another name for the community oriented police officers, and they do a tremendous job. And they do, from a civic leader perspective, which I consider myself, they are intertwined in each community. They do this by either going to local civic association meetings, church events. They do a tremendous job on what they call National Night Out, which is the first Tuesday of every August. It's been going on for maybe 30 years now, where they have a sort of a picnic barbecue at a community park, where the residents get to meet their local law enforcement officers and help build a relationship. So I am a big fan of community-oriented policing. I think it does a tremendous job for protecting communities across Long Island, and I'm happy that the study reiterates that.
Kyle, what are you hearing from residents of Long Island? I'm talking specifically now about minority groups. What do they think should be done that isn't being done right now?
Well, I will say this. In 2014 in Nassau County, and this is something that the law enforcement officers probably wouldn't want to mention, is that problem-oriented police officers or community-oriented police officers are sometimes the last to be budgeted. Because overtime costs can get so high, often the POP units are the ones first cut. And that's what happened to curtail overtime in 2014. They eliminated almost all of the problem-oriented policing units. And there was a big backlash where 2 years later they had to reinstate, because of community uproar, they reinstated them. And since they haven't yet touched the groups because they know that they play such a vital role. In terms of how they've been evolving on Long Island, we've seen in Suffolk County they've made a huge effort to hire more bilingual police officers as community liaison officers as the demographic changes in many communities that they serve.
Officer Parker, thanks for being with us. Can you take just a moment to clear up something for me that I think will help with my questions? When we say Yale Police Department, are you part of the New Haven Police Department?
No, so we are, me and my partner, we're part of the Yale University Police Department within the city of New Haven. We worked in partnership with New Haven Police Department, but we get paid and have our own chief and own building, own establishment within the Yale University Police Department.
But in effect, would it be fair to say that you have the same responsibilities and guidelines?
100% correct. So definitely when it comes to our community engagement, I'm a officer that's originally from New Haven, born and raised. And I know when my partner and I were appointed to this position last year, we talked about Yale community engagement must have an impact within the city of New Haven as well as the Yale University community. So when we say the communities that we work with, we speak of Yale and New Haven.
But again, would it be fair to say that you have more interactions with students and staff at Yale than with residents of the city outside of Yale? Because I'm wondering
In the role of a community engagement officer,
yes,
or in the role of a patrol officer?
Community engagement.
I would say it's about 50-50. We do our due diligence to work within the schools within the city of New Haven, as well with the undergrad, graduate, faculty, staff within the Yale University community. So it's kind of a dual job of curtailing and doing work with both communities.
I was wondering about that, and in terms of, is there a different way that you interact with the students and the staff at Yale than with those maybe who have been longtime residents of New Haven?
Well, when it comes to any community, when you break it down to neighborhoods, each neighborhood is going to want and need different things from police officers. So when you're working with the New Haven community compared to the Yale community, yes, they want different things. So like programs and initiatives and meet and greets that we do within the city of New Haven, they may not work within the Yale University confines. The Yale University side, they may want to just meet and talk about what's happening in policing, just having that direct connection to the police departments, or just having those one-off events that they just know the police are there and they care about the well-being and the quality of life. But when it comes to programs that we do, my partner and I always say that there's nothing that we pretty much don't do now. We create programs for the youth within the city of New Haven. We work with the families, the elderly, the disabled within the city of New Haven. And then on the university side, we sit down, we work with individual departments that have just concerns about policing, concerns about life at Yale, and try to guide them and create an understanding of what the job and the role of the Yale Police Department is within the community of Yale.
Before I bring Chief McNamara back in, Officer Parker, what are your overall thoughts on community policing?
It's a tough job. It's a tough position, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I always give kudos and credits to our chief of police, Chief Higgins. He created this role as a community engagement officer last year. And what he did, he took two officers out of patrol and made them solely community engagement officers. So my partner, Martha, and our job is to just go out there and deal with quality of life issues, build relationships, and be true community members within the Yale and New Haven communities. We work Tuesday through Friday, 10 to 6, but I can tell you right now, we haven't had a day off in the past 2.5-3 weeks. But again, we wouldn't have it any other way. The relationships that we've built, the trust that we've gained within our communities, those are things that you can't account for, and things that, again, the amount of hours and the amount of days that we work, I wouldn't trade it for the world. I know the other panelists talked about the budgets and police departments cutting these community engagement teams. I think that we are starting to be in an era where the community is demanding these community engagement officers. And I think I've learned by pulling officers off patrol and putting them in these roles as community engagement officers and have this as their only task, you kind of circumvent that argument of budgets and things like that, because I can tell you from my personal experience, my salary went down just a little bit when it came to overtime because of the hours that I work. So it's truly, I don't think that can be a valid reason anymore, because this is a true demand of what the community wants. And as our job as police officers, we should be the ones that find ways to make this happen for them.
Before I bring the chief back in, I just have to ask you one other question. When you were starting to respond there, you just kind of let out, I won't say an exasperated sigh, but, you know, it sounded like you took a deep breath. I'm assuming from the way you sounded that it's just emotionally and physically demanding.
It's emotionally, it's physically demanding. I could tell you my partner and I, we work 8 to 8 sometimes. We work 8 to 12 sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't stop. I literally just ran from a community meeting right now, and I'm running to another meeting that I know I'm going to be late for. But again, it's one of those things that I know by being at that meeting, I know by being at that event or sitting in the home of a resident from the city of New Haven, that they are getting something positive out of it. And they're creating these relationships with police officers that are so needed these days. And I can tell you, I probably work a lot more than what I ever did when I was on patrol, but when I go home at night, I know I'm doing good, not just for myself, not just for my department, but for policing nationwide, to start changing that narrative for communities to know that, hey, there are police officers that truly care about what's going on. And I can tell you right now, at the end of the day, that's what we should start putting as a number one priority when it comes to policing, is making sure that these communities know that they have officers within these police departments that care and that will work tirelessly to build these relationships and build the foundation of trust back up.
Chief McNamara, I've heard the word budget thrown around a few times now in the last half hour or so, and in terms of cutting these programs, it seems somewhat short-sighted, doesn't it?
Well, I think the issue always becomes limited resources with the demands of the community. And what you're seeing is the passion behind all these officers and the discussion with those in the last break talking about it. There's a passion in there. This is not made up. It's passion. And I think what we realize is that these reports, that Kyle's examination of community policing and police legitimacy that was done, reinforces the fact that these programs are important and that they need to be funded properly. If we don't have studies like that to verify it, you know, people always want to see that outside of that intangible feeling that people have. This kind of supports that, to prevent these things from being eliminated during those times of budget decrease. But it is important to note that it is a philosophy that has to be throughout the department. I know Chief Higgins from Yale very well, and his philosophy is one of community outreach, and it has to be throughout the organization. And while these units are very important to have, you need every officer engaged in the fact that we need communities, because if they're not all engaged in that, one poor interaction really hurts some of the mission driving forward.
Kyle Strober, Suffolk Police Commissioner Geraldine Hart told us recently that there's a concerted effort nowadays to hire more Hispanics and other minorities onto the force. Do you have any information as to how this is going, or even there in Suffolk County or in Nassau County?
Oh, Ron, well, first I just want to go back to Officer Parker's comments. Just to be clear, my comment regarding the budget was that the community and civic leaders demanded more problem-oriented police and those units be restored.
Mm.
So I am totally in agreement that these are vital components of a department, and that I don't think an elected official would, on Long Island at least, question the value of them or even think about cutting them in a way to curtail spending. So I just wanted to be clear on that from my perspective here. In terms of Suffolk County, I mean, as I mentioned, the demographics are changing here, and there are more. There's a larger Hispanic population that's coming into the communities here, and Suffolk County and Commissioner Hart is addressing that head on. She is making a concerted effort to hire more bilingual officers, those who can, you know, meet with civic associations and many residents who may not speak English as their first language, and be able to build relationships, and not only relationships, but build intel. Part of being a problem-oriented police officer, a community-oriented police officer, is making relationships with the community so the community feels comfortable speaking to them and telling them what they're seeing and what's going on. And that information can be, I assume, and I'll let the law enforcement officials here attest to that, but be vital to just combating crime in their particular jurisdiction. It's one thing having a resident, I could say this firsthand, having the only way to contact the police department is calling 911. It makes it a lot more comfortable and a lot more reassuring when you have the direct number to the desk, or even sometimes the cell phone to a community officer, community oriented police officer, that you can call and in confidence explain to them a situation or what they're seeing going on, knowing that that officer is going to take their information, keep it confidential, and actually act on it. There's a feeling of confidence that your call isn't going nowhere when you have these relationships. And I think that's what you're seeing on Long Island more and more with these outfits.
I have 2 minutes left in the program, so I'm going to ask the three of you for final thoughts. Chief McNamara, if you don't mind, if you could take 30, 45 seconds, maybe to say something that we didn't get to before.
It all comes down to leadership in law enforcement, leadership and diversity. We need strong leaders who understand the value of community policing and the value of our community, and then we need them to also understand that a diverse police department, male, female, and the like, and matching that with what our community is really, really important. The more diverse we are, the more powerful and the more effective we are, and the more we have strong leadership that understands that and sends that message forward, the more successful we're all going to be for safer communities.
Officer Parker, final thoughts, please.
I know I catch a lot of flack when I say this, but I always speak on terms. Community policing, and I always talk to the community, I always talk to people. Policing in general has a negative connotation when it comes to it. So when you go into a community and you talk about community policing, then community is already put off because they hear that word policing and they're saying, well, you want something from me. And I think here we preach a lot, just community engagement. Community engagement means that I, Martin Parker, Officer Parker, LPD, want to be a part of your family, want to be a part of your community, want to learn from you and gain the trust that we need to build on so that we have a great foundation in these relationships. And I think the era of policing is swaying a lot more in that community engagement part, where the communities want police officers that can relate to them, want police officers that can understand them, want police officers that may have gone through the same problems with them to be able to sit down in their living rooms and just have a conversation, a heartfelt, caring, passionate conversation about what's going on in life and how we as police officers can do our part in trying to better their quality of lives.
Officer Parker, I have to hold you there because I just want to get 20 seconds from Kyle Strober. Kyle?
Oh, you could let Officer Parker yield my time. I was just going to say that community-oriented policing is vital, and that protecting our communities, particularly in large counties like Nassau and Suffolk, that have over 1 million people and only 2,400 on the Nassau County PD, without interactions with civic leaders and residents and having a bond there, which is vital to protecting communities, to cover more ground, to have more eyes and ears than they have before.
Kyle, I have to hold you there. I'm sorry, I'm out of time. Okay. Kyle, thank you. Thank you. Officer Parker, thank you. Chief McNamara, thank you.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. J.D. Allen's the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan, the news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.